session number 6058, reel 5.
You are telling me about the sabotage that was committed by the POWs on Taiwan. Can you tell me some of the details?
Well, I really don't know enough about the mechanics of these type of vessels to describe exactly, but I know that sundry bits of machinery were removed from moving parts and exposed bits of the engines and so forth. I saw on at least two occasions a couple of Australians who I subsequently knew later to be rather wild characters, and they were putting all kinds of debris in the fuel tanks because the fuel tank caps were very accessible, and as I say, you simply had to step off the quay onto the deck of these vessels, and under the Japanese guards. There were so few of them, and they were so casual in their attitudes that there seemed to be absolutely no problem in getting aboard them.
So these were the MTBs?
Boats of that kind. They were high-speed naval launches. Now, what their particular function was, I really can't remember, or I perhaps wouldn't even have known, but my feeling at the time was that they were that type of vessel, yeah. And I know that for several months after, even in Korea, we were extremely apprehensive about whether the repercussions of this of these incidents would ever catch up with us, because the Japs must ultimately have discovered that things had been done to these boats. But for whatever reason, we never did hear anything more about it, fortunately.
Was the cargo of bauxite replaced?
Yes, that was another of the tasks that we had. And, the bauxite was replaced by sacks of rice. And before these could be loaded aboard in this space, which had been taken up by the bauxite, the holes had to be hosed down, scrubbed out, which again was a rather messy business with the spray and the high pressure hoses, bilge pumps operating to help get rid of the excess water and so forth, so we were wading about in red slush and red spray and so forth, but we did get them cleaned out, and then the walls, the sides of the vessel inside, had to be lined with straw matting placed on the floors, and then when all was prepared, these large sacks of rice, again the sacks were made of a straw matting, were lowered into the hold, and they were received by us below and stacked in the various parts of the hold.
What was the ultimate destination of the Fukai Maru?
I don't know the ultimate destination, but we were disembarked in the port of Fusan in South Korea. I think the story was that the vessel was proceeding to Japan, in fact, and that Fusan was just a calling off place to disembark the prisoner.
What happened after you disembarked at Fusan?
Well, we were assembled again on the quayside and got together. And sometime later, during the same day, at any rate, during the course of the afternoon, we were paraded through the main streets of Pusan. And the population lining the route, obviously very much on show as an example of the victories of the Japanese army. But My impression was that the population were not awfully excited about it, and that there were no hostile demonstrations or anything of that kind. They sort of stood quietly there, and I had the feeling that they'd rather have been some other place. So perhaps it was a rent-a-crowd type situation.
Where were you taken to from Fusan?
Well, we found ourselves in another prison camp. Or should I say a prison camp, because this, to me and to most of us, I think, was our first experience of the traditional type of prison camp, as one imagines it, with a wall around and guard boxes at the around the perimeters and so on, and with regular army type sort of hut accommodation for us to be billeted in. And this was at a place called Cho Sen. And I'm just aware of, I'm not sure just how far from the port this was, but I have a feeling it didn't take us very long to get there. It must have been somewhere in the southern Korea sort of area.
Did you?
Well, as I say, it was traditional, what I subsequently learned to be traditional Japanese army type accommodation. These were quite well constructed, looking fairly new, wooden huts with the central corridor down the middle and raised shelves about 2 feet from the floor down either wall, and straw matting on the shelves. And this was where we slept. We were given palliasses, straw-filled palliasses, which we arranged along the shelves down the sides of the hut. And this was our sleeping accommodation.
Was the diet in Korea the same as what you'd had further south?
Yes, yes, we were still being fed rice with very little else. And by this time we were mostly suffering from various nutritional deficiency diseases. Quite a lot of dysentery around, of course. We had disembarked a certain number in Formosa, the more serious cases. But as a result of the work and so on in Formosa, although it had been a pleasant change in some respects, the shortage of food and the poor diet and the heavy work probably reduced our health even more than it would normally have been. I know that there was some argument about the quality of the food, and some effort was made to give us improved rations. But the time that we were actually working in Formosa, I think by Japanese army regulations or whatever, we were supposed to have had extra rations for doing manual work. But in the event, they didn't materialise, and so we were still only getting the basic rice with the vegetable stew. And this continued after we arrived in Korea at the prison camp at Cho Sen.
What were the guards like at Cho Sen?
Quite reasonable, quite civilised. No violence or too much pushing around, as far as I remember. Again, it took a while for us to shake down and get ourselves together and organize. I remember at one stage we were presumably, until the Japanese decided what to do with us, we were actually doing Japanese army drill on the parade ground in the center of the square around in these barracks. And we had what looked like a veteran Japanese sergeant, NCO, drilling us, very much in the tradition of the British Army style, except that we were having to do some kind of goose step, which the Japanese Army favours, and learning their commands for attention and stand at ease and numbering and so on. And it was all taken in pretty good humour, and in fact this NCO reminded me very much of a traditional British Army NCO, in that his bark was much louder than his bite in most respects.
Did you go on work parties?
Yes. There were various kinds of work parties. The one I recall being on mostly was in a quarry not too far away. We marched there, if I remember rightly. And there we were put to work breaking up these stones. The Japanese must have been there previously and done the blasting and so on, because these enormous pieces of stone and rock and so on were sort of scattered around the floor of the quarry, and we were given hammers and had to break the large pieces up into smaller pieces. Then we had to shovel them aboard into some metal tubs on a small gauge railway line, and after having loaded the tubs, we had to push them along this line to the end, which terminated in a main railway line or a siding where the rail trucks were waiting for the tubs to be emptied into. So that was fairly heavy work, and again we had no improvement in our rations, so we were struggling a bit. At least I remember at the time myself, who had been in pretty good health, fortunately, apart from a bit of a edema and signs of early beriberi, I found I was losing sensation in the tips of my fingers and in my hands, and feeling as though I was wearing some type of velvet glove, and had no sensitivity. So I think it was a sort of a peripheral neuritis, which is one of the symptoms of beriberi.
How long were you at Chos then?
I find it difficult to put together the actual time periods, but I seem to recall it being about November when we left there, late November.
Was this 1942?
1942. And as we hadn't left Changi until sometime in August 1942, and in the meantime we'd had this lengthy voyage and a sojourn in Formosa, we couldn't have been, at least the party I was with, we couldn't have been very long in Korea. It must only have been a matter of weeks or a couple of months at the most, actually. 6 weeks, perhaps.
Where were you taken to after Chosen?
Well, here again, the way the Japanese Army mind seems to work very much like the British Army, we were, a few of us were assembled together out of whatever number was left of us. I think I remarked that approximately 1,000 of us left Singapore. We had lost a certain number on the way for various reasons. So assuming, say, 900 of us arrived in Chosen, 100 of us were selected, again it seemed haphazardly and for no reason that I knew of, to be moved away from Chosen. So we were assembled and marched off and found ourselves at a railway station, and it was from here that we started our journey to Manchuria.
Did anything happen to you on that journey in particular?
Well, the significant thing about the journey was, as I say, waiting for something to happen on the railway platform. This train pulled in after a while, and to our surprise, it was already loaded with prisoners of war who, it turned out, were Americans who had been taken prisoner in the Philippine Islands. And they were leaning out of the windows and shouting and were exchanging greetings and trying to work out what was happening and so on. It was a very long train. It turned out there were about 1,500 Americans aboard. They hitched another coach on the back, loaded the 100 British, and we accompanied the Americans up through Korea and across the border and into Manchuria, where we subsequently found ourselves at the station in Mukden.
Were you taken to a camp straight away in Mukden?
Yes, we were. We were put aboard Japanese army trucks and arrived after a while at this new camp of ours. And I say new in the sense that it was a new location, but the camp itself was a very, very ancient sort of... I think it dated back to the Chinese army accommodation in the time before Manchuria was conquered by the Japanese. And it certainly, I'd have said, it could have easily gone back even earlier than that. There were just a series of wooden, very, very primitive wooden huts set in a muddy sort of compound. And I recall it was a very grey, overcast November day, bitterly cold, and the first winter snows were starting to fall. And these long wooden sheds were set out in rows, and they were sort of half sunken into the earth to protect them from the weather. The roofs were made of, consisted of mud or turves laid out to cover the wood, and to enter the huts we had to go down some steps below ground, and the buildings were approximately 50% below ground and 50% above ground. They were in a terribly dilapidated condition. They were hanging off the walls, there were holes in the roofs, and again, they were inside consisted of the traditional accommodation of this long central corridor with the raised wooden shelves on either side where we had to sleep. And the corridor down the centre was just an earthen floor. It wasn't covered with boards or anything like that. The shelves on which we slept were made of wood. They were raised about 18 inches from the ground. And there were some very, very primitive brick-built stoves in the centre of the aisle down the middle, which were supposed to be the source of heat for the hut.
Were you given fuel?
We were given a very, very limited amount of... what the Japanese described laughingly as coal, but in fact it was a very coarse, very what we describe nowadays as nutty slack. It was mostly dust with just a few little knobs of coal, and scarcely enough to create any kind of heat at all. I should say here perhaps that, as I remarked earlier, there were 100 of us who were British. And when I say British, I include the Australians, who were about 20 or so from the out of the 100, so there'd be about 80 from the UK, 20-25 perhaps from Australia. And we stuck together, and we occupied one of these huts. And the Americans were split into similar groups of similar numbers and occupied the remaining huts. So the Americans were in separate accommodation to the British.
How did you get on with the American POWs?
Wonderfully well. Obviously, it was a very exciting experience to meet up and know that other people were, that we were all in it together. But the Americans, unfortunately, were in a very, very poor state of health. And I found that my first job, almost before I'd had a chance to unpack my gear, the medics were called out by our British medical officer, Captain Phillips. He was Captain Brennan. He was an Australian Army medical officer. And all the medics amongst the British, as I said earlier, about 20 of us left Singapore, but most of them were left behind in Chosen. So I was supposed to be about 6 or 8 British medics in the contingent by the time we arrived in Mukden. So we were all assembled by Captain Brennan and a couple of other American medical officers. And the first job was to sort out all the sick and wounded and injured from the American contingent and get them together, diagnose the severity of their illnesses and put them in separate accommodation. And for this purpose, the Japanese assigned a separate hut, identical to the others, but for use as for the treatment seek. And this is where we put the most seriously ill patients.
Why should the Americans have been in a worse physical state than the British?
Well, one heard all kinds of stories and reports, but the general feeling was that by the time the American surrender took place, there was an even worse breakdown in their organisation than we'd experienced in Singapore. And I got the distinct impression that the organisation for the supply of any remaining food, medical supplies or materials of any kind, simply didn't exist. And it seemed that people, although they'd been herded together in a particular area, as we had been in Singapore, that each man had been responsible more or less for himself, and that there'd been no way of ensuring that everybody had their rations or any medical treatment if it had been required. And consequently, there was a situation where people had cornered food supplies, medical supplies, and the ones who had been unlucky had had to do without, and the subsequent... Illness and so on, which came as a result of even worse malnutrition than we'd experienced, and also the absence of medical attention, it would appear.
Didn't the American officers exercise control over the men in regard to this cornering of supplies?
Well, I'd be very much surprised if some effort wasn't made, but of course, one only hears the experiences of individuals and the stories which were repeated to me seem to suggest that the officers were in the same predicament as the men and having to forage for themselves. There seemed to be no central control least in the area where this particular group had come from, which one finds difficult to believe, but there was the evidence, and the stories did appear to hang together.
Didn't the Americans have their own medical orderlies?
They had some medical orderlies, but again, one had the impression that they were little more than stretcher bearers. That they seemed to have had no medical training in the general sense. They certainly knew very little about the treatment of the patients from our own observation. Not to say they were not willing, but they simply had not had the experience, and they worked under our supervision for the most part. There were a couple of very able, very competent American medical officers, of course, who organized them, and also, of course, organized their own sick and injured and wounded as far as was possible, but they relied to a very great extent on the British medical personnel.
Was the diet the same in Mukden?
No, this was one of the good things about our move. We did finally get away from the rice diet, and we were pleasantly surprised to be issued with a certain amount of flour and vegetables which were at least recognisable. I think we had a few hot potatoes and something resembling turnip or something of that kind. And even little bits of meat on occasion, and our cookhouse personnel seemed to be able to prepare a reasonably good sort of stew, and enough flour to supply everyone with two small bread rolls. About the size of the palm of one's hand, and we received two of those a day, plus this stew for the evening meal, and they also produced some which was familiar to the Americans, but which was new to me. It was a corn meal concoction. It was ground corn.